I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me, and now Max Foisy would normally be joining us for the Showbiz Show in this hour, but Max has the day off, and so I've asked my friend Jim Batts, who is a movie reviewer for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, where he writes reviews and is also part of their weekly podcast. I've asked him to join us. Hi, Jim, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. This is a great great pleasure to be here. I listen every Friday, and it's kind of surreal to be in the place where all the action happens. There,
yeah, so. This is where the action happens.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Did I miss a memo?
There's action in here.
He's in the wrong studio.
Oh, okay.
Before we get going, I also want to plug what Jim also does with the rest of his time. Jim is a caricature artist who has a stand at Grant's Farm.
Yes, well, I work for a company that has a stand there. I kind of run it for them. And I just wanted to mention, if anyone comes up to me at the stand and tells me that you've heard me on the Paul Harris Show, I will take 20% off your nose. And then I will eliminate a chin, maybe, you know.
Very, very nice.
No, I'll take a couple of bucks off, certainly.
Yeah. So Grant's Farm, you're there, what, 5 or 6 days a week, aren't
you? About every day, but Monday, weather permitting. Tomorrow's kind of tricky. I'm hoping this the storm will pass us. I doubt it, but we'll see. But yeah, generally there about 9:30 or 10 in the morning, there till, usually on the weekends till about 4 or 4:30. The weekdays, it varies. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. Last week, Jim actually did a caricature for me. He knows that I'm a poker player, and I was in a poker movie called Mississippi Grind.
A great movie.
Thank you. And made a caricature of me playing poker against Steve McQueen from The Cincinnati Kid and James Garner from Maverick.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
And who has all the chips?
Me.
I was telling Paul I should have put out Mustang car keys from Steve McQueen that you had won his
from
car
Bullet,
from.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Yeah. But again, remember, it's a caricature. It's not reality. That's all it is. So Jim's here, and he actually goes to more movies than I do, and there are four of them opening up this week, and you've seen all four of them.
Yes, I have.
So let's start with what is likely to be the biggest box office winner of these four this weekend, and that's got to be the new Alien movie, which is called Alien
Covenant.
Yes. Not Revenant.
No.
That's the one where the bear attacks
that's
the ship.
Right. That's right.
And Leonardo DiCaprio is saved.
The bear bursts out of Leo's chest.
Whoa.
No. Well, I should tell you offhand, I'm probably not going to like this as much as Max did. And like Max, I can't tell you what King Arthur last week was about, so I can't be of no help.
You know, last week, Max and I both absolutely slaughtered King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, on the air. And it went on to bomb big time.
Oh, it's the biggest of the year, or maybe of the summer so far, that's for sure.
I checked Box Office Mojo this morning, which is a website where you can see the latest box office numbers from any movie that's out there. It has made, in the last week, $19 million. Its budget was $175 million. And normally you take the budget and double it because of marketing costs and all the rest of the stuff, right?
Oh, at least, yeah.
So it's a $350 million movie that had an opening week of $19 million.
Ooh. And in what, 2000? Screens to 250
something like that.
Yeah. So unbelievable.
Horrible.
But, yes. Well, Alien Covenant is better. I should mention that. Now, this is the first Alien movie since Prometheus about 5 years ago. They were sort of dancing around Prometheus, whether it was an Alien film. Well, it was a prequel.
Okay, now let me just stop you because here's what I know about Alien.
Okay.
There's the original one with Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
There's Aliens, plural, with Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
Then there was Alien
3.
That was
in 92, I believe.
Okay, was she in that?
She was in that. She was on a prison planet in that. And at the end of the film, well, I was about to spoil it, but hey, it's 25 years.
You're allowed to spoil it. On this show, if it's more than a few years old, you can spoil it.
She does have the alien in her and sort of sacrifices herself at the end of that film.
Okay.
But that doesn't prevent her from coming back 5 years later in Alien Resurrection.
Right. So there were four movies with Sigourney Weaver in Alien.
Yes.
And you would have thought that that would be the end of it. But then Hollywood said, wait a second, it's not going to be the end of it. We can go back and do prequels.
Yes. But in the meantime, they also did two films in which the alien met the Predator.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
They aren't... they aren't part of the canon, actually, officially. One of the geeks, Michael Hafner, mentioned that one site encapsulated each of the Alien movies in three words. The 79 original, it's Alien versus Truckers. In the 86 version, it's Aliens versus Marines or Soldiers.
Okay.
In the 92 version is Alien versus Convicts.
Mm-hmm.
Alien Resurrection is Alien versus Pirates, and they don't count the Predator movies. And Prometheus was Aliens versus Idiots. Because I don't know if you saw that one,
no,
Paul,
I didn't.
But it was so frustrating. The scientists are supposed to be, you know, at the top of their game, the most brilliant people that could be found. And something slithers out of the ground towards them, and they immediately reach out to pet it. I'm not going to do that.
No.
If I'm on an unknown planet.
You know what this reminds me of? Just a couple of months ago, we saw a movie called Life.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is about astronauts mm-hmm. on the International Space Station.
Yes.
Something has gone from deep space and has coming back to Earth. But before we bring it back to Earth, we're going to have it stop, a way station, if you will, at the International Space Station, so they can check it out and make sure that it's not going to be harmful to Earth if it were to ever be allowed to come here. So yeah. they're going to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into an alien-like story mm-hmm. where this tiny little thing seems awfully cute, and we're going to play with it, and it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
it's reaching out for him. Have you not seen an alien movie? These people have apparently they were too busy being astronauts. They never saw a movie that took place in space before they went to space. And of course, it ends up destroying all of them and then coming to Earth. And there'll probably be a sequel where it's on Earth, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if Life did enough business to merit a sequel. It might be one of those straight to video on demand type of deals.
But, yeah, maybe. So yeah. now we end up with Alien Covenant,
which could be described as Alien and Couples. I'll get to that in a second, but okay. They're a little bit smarter in this one, thank heaven. At the end of Prometheus, or during Prometheus, we were introduced to a robot, an android named David, played by Michael Fassbender. When this film starts up, you get a little sort of a flashback to the events before Prometheus with he and his creator, who is played by Guy Pearce in an uncredited cameo in it, playing Mr. Whalen, the head of the corporation that figures in all the Alien movies.
Okay.
And then we flash forward. It's 10 years after the events of Prometheus, and there is another spaceship, a huge one, looking for a new home, similar to the spaceship. I don't know if you saw Passengers at the end of last year.
Yes, with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt.
Yeah, they're all looking for a new place to settle.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, the crew is about a dozen people, and they're all couples. They're man and wife, that sort of thing, and they're going to help bring these embryos, there are thousands of them there on the ship, to populate this distant planet that they have in their computer system, but they have to sleep during the journey because it's such a long one.
Yeah.
So the new android, Walter, also played by Michael Fassbender, is sort of running around, talking to the computer, making sure everything goes fine. And then a disaster occurs, of course. There's some sort of energy pulse that strikes the ship, and several of the crew people in the pods perish, including a big star who has a unnamed cameo. But I should mention that one of the other astronauts in it is one of the settlers, is Danny McBride, and this actor that perishes has made a lot of movies with him, so that kind of narrows it
okay.
down
kind of all right.
a little bit.
Does it rhyme with Schmil Schmerl?
It rhymes with, Bames Banco.
Okay. Okay.
So, they're having to deal with a lot of people that are now widowed on board. And now the leadership of the ship has gone to Billy Crudup, playing a character named Orem. And he's a little skittish about it. He doesn't know if he has the support of the crew or not. But they have to do some repairs. So, like Passengers and like, Gravity, I guess, would be another film.
Mm-hmm.
Or they do it in Life also. They have to go outside the ship to do these repairs. And while Danny McBride, who plays a character called Tennessee, and it's not a World War II film, so there's not somebody named Brooklyn that sticks to them. But he's out there working on the ship, and all of a sudden his helmet gets a transmission, a distress signal, an SOS, and they once he gets back on board, they investigate this. It turns out from a, there's a, it comes from a planet that wasn't on the route, that they didn't know about it, but they do some investigating. It looks like it's habitable. And since the other crew members don't want to get back in those pods, which prove deadly for their kin or their, you know, their spouses, they say, well, let's go to this other planet because it has the same, you know, life, it can support life and all that. Now, Paul, has that ever really worked out well for a space crew deviating from their route to go to an, no. That never does.
Yeah.
And, of course, the big ship, the Covenant is the name of the ship, by the way. The big ship can't land on the planet. They have to send down a landing party in a smaller ship. And some of them, of course, are exploring the planet. It looks very nice. There's a lot of rolling hills and mountains and a lot of green. There's even a wheat field, for goodness sakes.
Mm-hmm.
But, because it supports life there, they don't have their helmets on. But they probably should have, because one of them kicks a plant that's on the ground, and these spores float into his nostrils. And wouldn't you know, that's how the xenomorphs get into them this way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so now, once again, we've got aliens inside of human beings.
Yes, yes.
Do any of them come bursting out of anybody's chest or stomach?
One comes out the back this time.
Oh!
I guess since it's a spore and not out of a, not the facehugger.
Okay.
You know, they float in that way. One floats in like through the nasal cavity, another through the ear. So
okay,
get very graphic with that.
I'm going to guess by the way you're describing this that it doesn't really stand up on any kind of scientific believability scale.
No. I mean, even if there were oxygen, you know, if you weren't exactly 100% sure of the life forms down there, I think you would have taken some extra protection probably. You know,
and there's a lesson to you kids. Always practice safe space. Take protection with you when you go to any alien planets.
Now, is this based on a true story?
It is based on a true story.
Okay,
based on a true nightmare. That's for sure. But of course, eventually they get the landing crew gets surrounded by the beasties. But someone comes to their aid. It's someone in a long robe with a hood on. But it's not Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, fending off the.
Don't tell me there's an old Earthling who has managed to figure out how to live there.
No, it is David, the original android that we met in the flashback. So you've got two Michael Fassbender for the price of one. Hear that, ladies?
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
Yes. And they're, of course, since they're under siege by the creatures, David leads them into a sort of hiding area, which looks like a huge auditorium or something like that, or an old church or something like that. And they're sort of waiting it out, hoping that the Covenant can make it through the nasty storms that surround a planet.
Of course.
That always happens. That's why,
you know,
they can't, you know, come down right away. And during the course of this, David befriends Walter, the newer, updated version of himself. And believe it or not, I'm reminded of what Jack Parr used to say, I kid you not, we get a 3 or 4 minute scene of the two android Michael Fassbenders teaching each other how to play the flute.
I'm sorry. My headphones cut out there for a second. It sounded like you might have said there's a flute lesson in the middle of this movie.
Yes. And it just comes to a
and you're not using fault. You're not using a euphemism here.
No, you're talking
about an actual musical instrument,
yes,
the flute.
Yes, he's teaching, David is teaching Walter how to use the flute, and I'm sitting there going, really?
Wow.
Really?
Well, I that's all I can take about this movie. What do you give this thing on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being the best?
Oh, I would probably give it maybe a 3 or a 4.
Wow.
It's interesting, though, it's not released in 3D, and there's a good reason for that. They've desaturated all the color. It's gray and dark. And you could imagine how dark the picture would be in a theater that's not, you know, really synced up to do really good 3D.
Yeah.
So that's tough. But I don't know, this seems like a step backward for Ridley Scott after the triumph of The Martian a few years ago.
Oh, I didn't know he made this new one.
Yeah. He did. He did Prometheus, and he did this one. And he sort of reminds me of maybe a rock star from the 70s who was still going out on tour, but is still sort of playing the greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
And his greatest hits here being, you get the face hugger, you get the little shot of the tail going around the neck of the victim, you get a chest burst, and you even get the Jerry Goldsmith score used quite frequently during the film. So I was quite taken aback by that. And before it came came out, they released photos of one of the main characters, Daniels, who's played by Catherine Watterson, the daughter of Sam Watterson, looking quite a bit like Sigourney Weaver from Aliens. So I actually thought this was a reboot of the 79 version.
I saw that on the poster. I didn't see the trailer. I didn't watch any of it, but I saw it on the poster and I thought, wow, did they do CGI to get her to look like the young Sigourney Weaver did in the original movie?
Yeah.
It's a little bit creepy.
And, you know, there's a big action scene they're showing quite a bit of in the trailer that's on top of the ship with Catherine Watterson's character rolling off and all that. And if you think about it, I don't want to, you know, give away too many spoilers of the plot. It's tough enough to follow as it is. But when you think about it afterwards, like, well, that's totally unnecessary. It's completely illogical. And it was just put in there so there could be sort of an action beat for that last half hour, 20 minutes of the movie. And and there's a big mystery at the end of it that you know where it's going, you know, well down the turnpike, well down 270, I guess.
Have they set themselves up for Alien Part 9 or whatever they're getting to?
Yeah, Alien, you know, Covenant Returns or something. Or another
Or just going to kill the franchise for a while until there's another reboot in 10 years.
Well, I think that, well, from what I hear, Ridley wants to make this part of a trilogy beginning with Prometheus. This is the middle part, and he says he's going to do another one. Like I say, it's going to make a lot of money this weekend, but I don't know if it's going to really have the return business. So I think that it's not going to kill the franchise, but I think this is one of the franchises that needs to take another rest or get some fresh blood involved with it.
All
because
right.
I don't see what else they can do with it. I know that 20th Century Fox, of course, lost the Star Wars franchise to Disney, and they want to get another science fiction franchise with this, and they're rebooting Predator, but I don't think this is the way to go.
All right, 3 or 4 on a scale of 10, somewhere in there. All right, that's what Jim gives it. We'll take a break here. Oh, you know what? I have 2 minutes before we take a break here, and that's just enough time for me to give you a review of a movie called The Lovers. We have 4 movies this weekend. I want to get the second one in before we have to take the break. The Lovers stars Deborah Winger and Tracy Letts as a married couple, both of whom are having affairs on the side. She's with a novelist. He's with a dance instructor. Both of them want the marriage to end so they can get divorced so that they can go off and be with their lovers. But once they decide that, the husband and wife discover each other sexually again, and they start having a hot affair with themselves. In fact, lying to the lovers about where they're going to be that night, making up excuses for why they can't be out with the people they're having an affair with because they're actually going to be home banging the spouse at home. So that doesn't last very long, though. Then they realize that once they're done with the sex, they still have nothing to talk about. They've been together for a long time. The marriage is obviously over. Here's the problem with this movie, and you saw it, so maybe you'll agree with me on this.
I probably will, yes.
I didn't care about any of these 4 people. I just couldn't care less about these people. Plus, Tracy Letts, who plays the husband.
Michael,
I still can't. He's the one who's responsible for a play and movie called August Osage County, which was essentially a family arguing at high volume for over 90 minutes and was unwatchable as far as I was concerned.
Oh, yeah.
So I still have a grudge against him for that, and this doesn't make it any better. You've seen this guy, Tracy Letts. You don't know his name, but if you saw his face, you go, oh, yeah, I've seen this guy in 200 movies. But you're not going to want to go see him in this one. It's called The Lovers. I give it a 4 on a scale of 10, and I think I'm being generous, Jim.
I think so. I think so. I give it about that. You'd even go into their son that comes in for a visit, who's a complete bummer of a guy.
He's got his girlfriend, and you don't care about them either.
And he's just a kind of a spoiled brat, too.
He is. The Lovers is playing in the art houses. You do not have to see that. There are the two ends of the spectrum. You got the independent movie The Lovers, bad, and Alien Covenant, big budget movie, bad. When we come back, we've got 2 more to tell you about. We'll see if any of those are good right after this. We are continuing along here with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian Geis and Dan Strauss here with me, of course. Max Foisy is off today, so Jim Batts is our guest movie critic today. He has already given Alien Covenant a 3 on a scale of 10, and I gave The Lovers a 4 on a scale of 10. That doesn't mean it's a better movie. It just means I couldn't decide on a number. Just like he couldn't with The Covenant. And they're both a 3 or a 4, somewhere in the don't bother, but not horrible, range. Now we have 2 other movies that are out this week, and you went to see one that is kind of a It seems to me like the boy in the bubble with a gender swap called Everything Everything.
Yes, yes. Well, generally when we go to screenings, Paul, as you mentioned, we don't see trailers, and I've had to suffer through this trailer at a couple of screenings.
By the way, I have not seen this movie, but I have seen the trailer for this at other screenings, so I know everything there is to know. Because that's what trailers are now. You don't get a tease. You get every plot point, and everything that might have been a spoiler alert is right there in the trailer.
Yeah, we saw it before Unforgettable, I believe.
That's correct.
Yeah. But, it is the boy in the plastic bubble with a good dollop of The Fault in Our Stars. It's in the genre that I always kind of dread, based on a young adult novel. But at least it's not based on a young adult novel series, like The Hunger Games or Divergent or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is about a young woman. She's 18. Her name is Maddie Whittier, and she is pretty much a prisoner of the house that she shares with her mother, that she has something they call SCID, severe combined immunodeficiency. That means that her body can't fight off everyday viruses and germs, so she has to stay in there. And her mother is a doctor, and she goes off to work at the hospital, so they have sort of a decompression chamber, like the entranceway to a spaceship or something.
An airlock.
Yeah, an airlock. Yeah, and there's a scrub area there where you have to scrub your hands down, you got to change your shoes and all that, and she goes in to take care of the daughter. Mom is a widow. They lost their father and her brother several years ago, so they relocated to this California house. And while mom's away, Carla, the maid, comes in, and she becomes sort of a surrogate big sister to Maddie, and they're giggling and all that about different things, and she's smuggling books into her. And Maddie occupies her time by studying architecture online, so she builds these intricate models of like a retro futuristic hamburger place and a Jetsons type library and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And she does little cutesy mini reviews of books, you know, Alice in Wonderland, Watch Out for the Queen, Watch Your Head, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And it's a little too precious at times. Actually, it opens with an animated sequence describing skids, and you've got little amoebas with eyes and little fists and all that, and it's way too precious and cute. And, of course, she's got a big window on the world, and she looks down one day and sees that they have new neighbors. And at the back of the van is Ollie, and Ollie is a dream. He's a fellow that looks like he could easily go into any boy band, and he's kind of nice, but a little dangerous edge. He wears black all the time. He's got a skate.
He wears black. He's edgy.
Yes, he's got issues, and he's got a skateboard. And, of course, he spies her. And, by the way, Maddie is a gorgeous young woman. And later on that evening, Ollie and his sister bring a bundt cake. You know, usually when people move into a neighborhood, the neighbors bring a bundt cake to the new arrivals.
We've done it with every neighbor who's come in. We're probably up to 30 or 40 bundt cake giveaways in my neighborhood. We love the bundt cake giveaways. Don't you do that in your neighborhood, Dan?
We give base hit cakes. We don't give bundt cakes.
It took me a moment to get that. Ian does sack fly cakes.
But of course, Pauline answers the door, you know, doesn't want their germs to get on Maddie. And she says, well, thank you, but, you know, you can't really see my daughter. We can't accept this gift or whatever. That's fine.
Okay, let me just stop right there. Yes. Let me just stop right there. Mom doesn't even take the cake for herself. Would it be too dangerous to have the cake even enter the house?
Right. Okay. Yes.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. If I'm mom, I sit in the airlock and I eat the cake.
There you go.
We never have cake here.
But earlier on, there's a scene of mom and daughter eating cake, watching one of their favorite movies, Moonstruck.
Okay.
I guess it's because it's an MGM UA co-production. They wanted to get Moonstruck in there. Well, later on that evening, Maddie looks out through a window. Wouldn't you know, her bedroom window looks sort of down on the bedroom window of Ollie. Uh-oh. And he tries to get her attention. He's doing a lot of cute things on the windowsill with the bundt cake and all that, and trying to, you know, like he puts a little IV to a bottle of water to it because the bundt cake's so dry and all that. That's his big thing. And of course, then he jots down his number, you know, backwards, of course, so she can read it on the window, and they start communicating. And I remember you saying with a film we saw last year, Paul, you have a tough time with people writing letters on screen because it's kind of boring cinematically.
Yes.
Same thing could be true with texting. Of course, they start out with the little bubbles popping up, a little animated bubble showing the what's going on, and then the actor's voice is using them. Then they just go even cuter and more precious. They actually show Ollie and Manny speaking to each other, but inside one of the teeny tiny architectural models.
So they've animated the conversation inside this imaginary world that she's built.
Yeah, this little retro burger place. And in each of her models, she has a spaceman, because the spacemen have to be protected against their environment like she is. That, you know, that's really subtle. But of course, they fall for each other, and Maddie convinces Carla, who's sort of the good cop to Pauline's bad cop in this, to let him come over, because Mom would never allow a visitor. And they go over there, and they have sort of an awkward in-person meet, and they start talking about math all of a sudden, and we get subtitles about what they're really thinking and talking about. I was like, somebody has seen a Best Picture winner from 40 years ago.
Annie Hall.
I know. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, well, maybe it's a tribute, or maybe it's a ripoff. I don't know what it is.
Okay, so eventually, I'm guessing that Ollie gets Maddie to go outside, even though she shouldn't, because the world could kill her.
Yes, well, you know,
Tell me that the world kills her.
Well, that would be spoiling it, but they do end up going to Hawaii. Somehow, this is another one of the illogical things, that through her laptop at home, Maddie is able to order plane tickets and order a deluxe room on the beach there in Maui.
Sure, all teenagers have access to credit cards like that.
Yes, that would let them make multi-thousand-dollar purchase like this, so it's kind of ridiculous.
And Maddie dies in Hawaii, and the movie's over.
I will tell a couple of nice things about it. You would think the Maddie character, since she's susceptible to germs and all that, she would be playing by a waifish type actress. But the young actress here, Amidala Stenberg, very, very healthy young woman, very curvy. So that's kind of a plus to see that they're not going with the paper thin supermodel.
All right, let's not give away any more of this movie. Give me a rating on a scale of 0 to 10.
Oh, I give it a 2.
Wow. Worse than Alien Covenant?
Yeah, but I'm like I say, it's not made for me. I know it's made for the 14 and 13 year old little girls.
All right. Let's move on to our final movie of this week, which is called Chuck, which is the story of a guy named Chuck Wepner, who was a liquor salesman and a dad. He had done some prize fighting. He was actually at one point ranked 8th in the world in the heavyweight class. And he was known as the Bayonne Bleeder, because when this guy got hit in the face or in the head, buckets of blood started pouring out of him. True story, Dan. True story. In 1975, after Muhammad Ali beat George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle, to everyone's surprise, Don King wanted to set up Ali's next fight, and he thought, well, let's make this a racial thing. Let's get a good white fighter to take on Ali. 9 of the top 10 heavyweights in the world at that time were black. Chuck Wepner was the only white guy. So they called him up and offered him a deal. And he actually did go and fight 15 rounds against Ali. He lost, but he created a name for himself that brought him a measure of fame for a while. Now, that fame expanded a little bit when Sylvester Stallone heard his story and essentially took the Chuck Wepner story and turned it into the plot of Rocky. Because if you remember, Rocky loses to Apollo Creed after fighting for 15 rounds in the first movie, which was a shock to a lot of people who went to see that, because here's your heroic character not winning. That was realistic, because Chuck Wepner didn't win. Well, in real life, Chuck Wepner's 15 minutes of fame got him more fame in New Jersey, but also got him more cocaine in New Jersey, and that became a problem. And
where the line, what's a bump?
Yeah, what's a bump? They did a lot of bumps in that.
Yeah.
His long-suffering wife is played by Elizabeth Moss, who is very, very good in this movie.
Yes.
The woman who plays the sassy bartender who Chuck becomes attracted to, among other women he has encounters with, is played by Naomi Watts. Virtually unrecognizable, I think, in the role, but very, very good. His brother is played by Michael Rapaport. Jim Gaffigan either put on a lot of weight or has a lot of padding in his role as Chuck's best friend who they go off and they party together, and he joins in the 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah.
I think it's a story that I had not seen before, and I thought it was very, very well told. And Liev Schreiber, who plays Chuck Wepner, is terrific in the role, don't you think?
Yeah, he is. I believe he co-wrote the script, too. So he does a great job. He's one of the producers.
It's not as good as The Fighter. Yeah. But it's way better than recent boxing movies like Bleed for This and
Hands of Stone
and things like that.
Yeah.
I give Chuck a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, and Stallone is a character in the movie, too.
Yes,
he comes off very well in the film.
Yeah, there's the guy named Morgan Spector who plays Stallone and does a very, very good job of it. Yeah. I give it a 7 out of 10. What about you?
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Maybe even 7.5, 8. You know,
so that's the one movie we can recommend you see this week. It's called Chuck. Mm. And that's all the time we have for the showbiz stuff this week. Jim Batts, you can find him at Grant's Farm doing caricatures most days of the week, and you can also find him at the WeAreMovieGeeks.com website and podcast. Thank you so much for coming in here today.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure. I hope Max can get a security deposit back. I hope I didn't wreck the place too badly.
Not too bad. This is the Big 550 KTRS.